Sioux Falls Mayor Paul Tenhaken says the next mayor must unite a divided electorate. You're listening to SDPB's In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. People across the state keep an eye to the largest city's leadership because city sales tax is a major boost to the state economy. Sioux Falls is also the location to the new state men's prison project. Meanwhile, the next mayor will oversee the relocation of the Smithfield processing plant. And all this gives the future mayor an outsized influence in state politics, arts, and economic development. Paul Tenhaken has been Sioux Falls mayor for 8 years now. He stopped by the SDPB studios in Sioux Falls with insight for the future mayor and a look at his own future. And a note to listeners, we recorded this conversation as the votes were being recounted in the runoff between Christine Erickson and Jamie Smith.
My final day was to be July 17, okay. If things would have happened normally. Mm-hmm. There's a very slight possibility that could still happen. I doubt it. Depending on when this airs, the recount's going to happen on Wednesday, July, is that 8?
8th, yep.
When that will start. And that will take, maybe a few days, up to a week. And then depending on how that goes, there's a lot of challenges that can play out in the courts. If either candidate would choose to go that route. So we could end up with a tie, we could end up with a couple vote difference, could end up with a 100-vote difference. So it just depends on what routes the candidates decide to pursue after that recount. So my time could be a couple more weeks, could be a couple more months. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just playing it day by day in that I'm still the mayor, I'm still going to show up. I have a city council meeting tonight, still got to do the day-to-day work of the city. This is a strong mayor form of government, which means we don't have a city manager. The mayor, signs 50 documents every day and still meets with leadership teams and still has a pretty hands-on role in running the city. So I'm just going to extend my tour as long as the city needs me. And then once this is all figured out, the dust settles, then I'll help transition the new mayor into this role, whether that's in a few weeks or a few months or whenever it happens.
What is your advice to both candidates, Jamie Smith and Christine Erickson, about how to behave like a leader while you wait and while you go through this process of a recount?
Well, I first off can't imagine how hard this would be because, when you campaign, you're going 100 miles an hour. It's events and it's interviews and it's social media posts and it's door to door. It's just doing all these things. And all of a sudden, this election happens. And it's screeching halt, and now you're living in the wait, and you're just waking up every day waiting at the speed of government for this recount stuff to happen. And so I have a lot of empathy for where they're at right now because they're just sitting, waiting. So what I would say to them right now, and what I do say to them, in fact, I just ran into Christine this morning at an event, is I said, hey, just let the process play out. But assuming, if you would end up victorious in this, one, assume the mantle with a lot of grace because the community is very, I don't want to say fractured, but this is about as split as you could get, obviously.
Right.
And so you're going to take office with a community that is pretty divided in terms of their decision-making and who they want to see in office. So your number one role that you need to be thinking about when you take office is how do you unite the community and bring everyone together, whether you were their preferred candidate or not. So day one and for the first 100 days, think about those unifying things that you can do, right? How can you maybe even bring your opponent into your transition team or something like that to start to bring some of those unifying things together to show that, hey, we may have been opponents and we may have even got so far as to go to this recount. But just continue to keep it positive and above board because your number one goal is going to be to unite the city, for the next several months.
Yeah. You said this in an interview with Mackenzie Huber of South Dakota Searchlight about the governor's primary, which where there were four different philosophies of what it means to be a Republican in South Dakota and how important that was. And I think that was a really smart way of phrasing it. When you look at those four candidates and the fairly even vote count of that primary, this is not a unified Republican Party statewide either.
Mm-hmm.
Same advice. Think about that transition team. Think about how to unify four different philosophies of Republicanism in state government.
What's really interesting right now, Lori, is that we kind of live in this political time where, you know, you and I may agree on so many different things, but let's say you are against data centers, and I'll pick the hot topic. You're against a data center, and I think a data center is a decent idea as long as it's done properly and the utilities are managed correctly and all these things. There would be people who will instantly say, Ten Haken is terrible because he is for data centers. And they would instantly discard me for that one issue because that's the current issue. And we discard someone so quickly over one issue. And you see that like in the Republican Party. Well, that's the pro-data center candidate, or that's the anti-economic development candidate, or that's the pro-life candidate, or that's the, you know, anti-this candidate. And it's like, well, we got to zoom out. And it's like, okay, we're going to always disagree on certain things. Mm-hmm. And I even look at Jamie Smith and Christine Erickson, bringing it back to this mayoral discussion, is those two are 98% aligned on almost everything.
Yeah.
They want a safe community with low crime, and we want good streets, we want great libraries, and, you know, we want low unemployment, strong economic development opportunities. We want fire stations that are affordable to build, and we want a capital improvement plan that's balanced, and all these same things. So no matter which one of those two takes office, this is going to be a great city going forward.
Yeah.
So are there going to be some nuances in how they want to get that done? Of course. So my message to our voter base, and I hope to help them, is that we're going to be in a good position either way. And I think as long as they go into this open-minded and say, hey, when you take office, just be receptive to maybe pivoting your positions a little bit to adapt to that 2 or 3% that maybe the other side is a little maybe needs to be a little more malleable on, and be willing to be kind of flexible. And that's one thing that politics teaches you, is you have to be more flexible, especially in local government, maybe than in state and in federal government, because in local government, you know, I have to break bread every day with people who are just coming out of jail, people who believe differently than me, think differently than me, look differently than me. But we're not talking about partisan issues. We're often just talking about local issues that they really don't have any partisan flavor. And that's why I'm so big on keeping partisan politics out of local government, because local government isn't partisan, and it really isn't. And so my advice continues to be, as much as you can do to deliver local government in a nonpartisan way, you have to look at doing that.
We just did a story last week where we interviewed Alexander Heffner, who hosts a show called The Open Mind on PBS, and he has a series called Mayors of the World. And he went to different places all over the globe to talk about leaders of municipalities and what kind of influence and power they can have, with the idea that in democracy, it's often the mayor that has the most impact on your life. And I thought of you, and I thought of just how important being a mayor can be. When you look back on the last 8 years, I want to go back, and I would love to talk to you for 2 or 3 hours about, you know, everything, but for today's purposes, when I interviewed you when you were coming into the office, I remember thinking that you were coming in as someone who didn't have knowledge 100% about how city government worked, and you were leaning heavily on your leadership ability and your ability to gather the right people around you who were going to tell you how things worked, and then you were going to take action on things. Is that a fair memory, do you think, that when you look back at the Paul Ten Haken of 8 years ago, that that's kind of true? Or am I misremembering some of those early days?
No.
Not that you weren't qualified. You were a qualified candidate.
You're basically saying I was underqualified. I get it, Lori. This, no,
no, I have concerns.
I'm kidding. You're spot on. Spot on. And it's actually, as I leave this office, that's what I'm going back to. I'm starting a consultancy that's going to be about leadership development and leading people, because that's what I'm good at. I stink at a whole lot of things. And you're right. Very green on municipal government when I came into the office. And I knew that. I didn't know a thing about policing, plowing streets, or library barcode delivery services, or, you know, parks and recreation program. Didn't know. And I still don't. But I have absolute crack people in all those positions. And I'm good at leading people. And so I empower them. I provide them with the right leadership programming. We have succession planning in place that we've put in, which didn't exist before. And I really just get the most out of my people. But who am I to think as a guy with a graphic design degree that started a web development company can come in and tell our cops that we need police precincts and we should be, you know, running our police department this way and we need a violent crimes unit with more people. Like, no, they know that better than I do. You tell me what we should be doing from a policing standpoint and I will empower you with all the resources you need. And the results will tell me if we're on the right track. And if we're not on the right track, I'll hold you accountable. And I'll say, all right, we need to make some changes. And the people are who you hold accountable. So they're going to be held to a high standard with the results. And if the results aren't there, we'll make some changes in the people. And so that's how I've led for 8 years. It's been a people-focused culture. And I've led people. And we've got three collective bargaining units, you know, three unions in the city, 1,500 full-time, 500 part-time, so, you know, roughly 2,000 people. So I think a lot of people underestimate that the job of the mayor of City Sioux Falls is a huge people management job. That's the largest part of this work is just managing, empowering, enabling, motivating your staff and people. I think I have 15 direct reports. It's a lot of people. And that's in addition to managing relationships with city councilors and your quasi-governmental partners, legislators, governors, like all these people that you have to maintain relationships with. If you are not a good builder, developer, relationship builder, bridge builder, you're really going to struggle in this work.
Yeah. You mentioned consultancy, and I was looking at paultenhaken.com, which is not affiliated with the city of Sioux Falls, but it gives us a hint of what you might be doing next as far as, you know, a leadership fellowship, a cohorts, public speaking. You have a book which has 52 sort of daily devotions, as mm-hmm. I understand it. I haven't read the book yet, but I saw you talking about it on your website. How long have you been synthesizing the leadership lessons? Have you been keeping like a record for as you learned new things as mayor and you were able to put them all together at the end? Or did you sit down over the last, you know, six mm-hmm. months or 3 months or a year and say, okay, what do I know? I'm going to start writing. Help me understand the process of how you got to where you're going to go next.
Yeah. Well, I'm a big journaler. I've been writing stuff down over the years. I give a lot of talks over the last 8 years to different groups, and those talks are based on experiences. You know, a group in, you know, Watertown will want you to maybe come and speak to their group on, you know, what's going on in Sioux Falls. And a mm-hmm. lot of times there's maybe a lesson on something that happened. How did the Smithfield deal come together, for instance? They want to maybe talk to their economic development group about that. So there's a lot of leadership and people stuff in that. That is really the core of how a deal like that comes together. It's a relationship building. And so you look back over 8 years, it's just full, chock full of leadership lessons, whether it's through COVID, whether it's through collective bargaining, whether it's through economic development deals, whether it's through major screw-ups that I've done that I've learned from, you know, whether it's natural disasters and managing EOCs, all these things. And I want to take some of those lessons and help other people be better leaders from it and basically say, hey, here's how I've screwed up and and I want to help you be a better leader and learn from either my mistakes or some of the things we've done right in Sioux Falls. So bad at a lot of things, Lori. I mean, I know where I'm weak, but where I really get a lot of joy and satisfaction is when I can see a leader who gets better, and especially a high test leader who's maybe towards the top of their pyramid. Because when a leader at the top gets better, everyone below them gets better. When they show up and they're a better version of themselves, all the people that fall beneath them and that they support and that they manage improve as a result. So, man, when you can make those leaders better, the whole organization improves.
How much high test is enough, and when do you need to step away? You know, you have, as a mayor, you have opportunities to step away. You didn't have to run for re-election, for example, and now you're term limited. So as a public servant, you can make that a chapter, not your whole book. But how do leaders identify, like, high test is great, but now I need to have a period of time that's more restorative? Do you see what I'm asking you there?
Yeah, 1,000%. I think that's part of what I want to instill in some of these high test leaders is I think the ultimate goal that too many are chasing is monetarily focused. Mm. And so there's never enough when monetary goals are your primary measuring stick. And so, I mean, I know a lot of successful guys, Lori, that you know, their balance sheets are really fat and they're on, their marriages are a mess and their kids won't talk to them, or, you know, they don't have a relationship with the Lord, or they're 60 pounds overweight, or, you know, whatever. And if you're not finding that balance in life, you're going to struggle. And so work is a big part of our life. Don't get me wrong, but so is your family. So is your children. So is your spiritual life. So is your physical health. So is your mental health. So is your personal relationships. I mean, I know a lot of guys that can count on one hand the number of close friends they have, because we just don't have a lot of friends. And we got to find balance in all those things. And so finding when to walk away from something, it's like, yeah, when those things are getting out of whack and you don't have that balance, that's maybe a good litmus test to say, all right, something needs to change here. And for me, I could easily stay in politics, be like, why don't you run for governor? Why don't you run for Congress? Why don't you? Because this is just a chapter. And I can tell if I would stay in this right now, my life would get out of balance. Mm-hmm. It's close to being out of balance right now, staying in this. And I got to find some balance again for my family, for myself, for my mental, physical health, all those things. So I know that about myself, and I want to help other people find that same balance.
So that goes to this word, contentment.
Contentment.
Your code of contentment. Tell me about that.
Well, for me, a code of contentment, and that's the devotional that I wrote. I want to help people find contentment. And I think contentment to me comes when you can find balance in those five areas that I mentioned, which is your work, which is your physical, mental health, which is your spiritual health, which is your family, and your relational health. And when all those things are working in sync with one another, you're really living a content life. And I left to run for mayor. I left a pretty great business. I had a great company, a great income, I had great flexibility. So American dream from the outside looking in, but I was not content because I didn't have significance. I had success, but I didn't have the significance that how was I making this world better? Mm-hmm. And I found significance in this work. I mean, I'm having a lot of impact on this community. And so that's been a nice change and a nice balance for me. And now it's time to find that significance in a new chapter. And that's going to be helping other leaders. Am I going to get rich off this next chapter? I'm not, for sure. I can tell you that. But it's going to be very satisfying. And I'm going to stay balanced because I'm going to be my own boss. And I'm going to control my schedule to make sure that I can have time with my family, have time for my health, have time for my devotions and time with the Lord every day, which is important to me, and all those things that will keep me content and balanced in life.
Yeah. You mentioned, changing your mind or making mistakes, or like ways that, you know, being in public service kind of pivoted for you. And I think about the sustainability plan in 2022 mm-hmm. and how there was this whole plan that you were enthusiastic about, and then you essentially changed your mind. I think Patrick Lally in Sioux Falls Live, that was the lead of his story, like, and then he changed his mind, where you said people from the business community came in and said, hey, this plan doesn't work for us, and you kind of took a different tack. You were criticized for that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can flesh that out if you want to, but what I really want to know is, when it comes to a resilient infrastructure in a city like Sioux Falls, you face a lot of challenges, from natural disasters to emerald ash borer and some deforestation issues with our trees, to pollution in the Big Sioux River. There were a whole lot of challenges that you face that the next mayors are going to face, and you have to lay the ground for what this city will be able to sustain 20 years from now, 50 years from now, mm-hmm. with more extreme weather events, bigger heat domes, all these things. What do you think should happen next when it comes to resilient infrastructure mm-hmm. for a city like Sioux Falls?
Yeah, it's a very tough topic. And it's a very tough topic in a state like South Dakota, which quite honestly still is fairly resistant to overly green initiatives. And that's probably the best way I can say that, is we want pragmatic approaches to resilient ideas. Okay. So when we introduced a sustainability plan, there were some that felt, all right, this is too aggressive. Some felt it wasn't aggressive enough. And I think that's always a sign of good policy, when you kind of piss off everybody. So, but what I task my team with is, every project we do, whether it's a huge interchange that we're redoing, whether it's a Jacobson Plaza, whether it's Smithfield that we're going to tear down and redo, there's three voices that should be at the table on every project. One, we should have our arts team at the table. And we should be asking, is there a public art angle to this? How are the arts represented? Because I just believe the arts are critical to a community. The second is, where are kids and families in this? How are kids and families a part of this project? And you may say, well, like a big interchange, what does that have to do? How are kids and families able to navigate this? How's a mom with a stroller going to get through this intersection? How are kids on a bicycle going to be able to get through this without getting run over by a 40-mile-an-hour car? How are kids and families going to be able to navigate this city and this project? And then the third, how is the sustainability of this project? How is the infrastructure? What's the runoff look like? What is this going to be like in 30 years when the temperature is going to be 4 degrees hotter on, you know, every year on average or whatever it might be? And some people just don't believe that. They say, hey, Paul, that's, you know, you're buying into the Green New Deal baloney, blah, blah, blah. Listen, I can tell you that we got our plows out. We have one snow alert this last year. We had one snow alert the previous year. I mean, there's a difference right now. There's been a difference in this climate. Like, when's the last time we had a foot of snow? Like, it's different. And if you don't believe that, I can show you what happened with our weather patterns when I've been mayor, and we've had more dramatic weather events. We've operated an EOC, Emergency Operations Center. We set up an EOC 12 times when I've been mayor, and 10 of those were for weather events. Previous three mayors combined stood up an EOC like four times or something. Hmm. So we had a lot of extreme weather events while I was mayor, and that, I don't see that changing. So those three questions, public art, kids and families, and sustainability, I've told my team, those three voices have to be at the table in every single project and make sure we're taking pragmatic approaches to each of those. So big questions, big challenges. They're expensive challenges too, because to make sure we're doing all three of those correctly costs money.
You have an opportunity now with your consultant business, this from whether it's speaking, writing, social media presence, digital offerings, or, you know, one-on-one relationships that you have with people to shape the future leaders of the state. Do you think you'll stay here are you planning to stay? I mean, do you want to target that to South Dakota, to Sioux Falls, or are you thinking that's more of a nationwide effort or a regional effort? Like, what are your thoughts about that?
Well, I mean, I love the state. You've given my heart, soul, time. I give my everything to Sioux Falls for 8 years. I mean, my everything. And you kind of get exhausted, to be candid with you. After 8 years, you're tired. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to continue to give everything I can to Sioux Falls and to South Dakota, but I also want to take some of the lessons here and maybe say, hey, is there some things that have happened here that can apply to Boulder, or that can apply to, you know, Tallahassee or West Bend, Indiana, or some lessons that I can help other communities with too. So I still want to stay really engaged and involved in South Dakota, but I also look at being the ex-mayor. It's kind of a weird role in that I equate it to being the pastor of a church that, you know, when they decide to step down from that church, do they keep attending that church, or do they kind of leave and go somewhere else and let the new pastor take over? And when you're the ex-mayor, you don't know where you belong. Do you still show up at ribbon cuttings and things, and you still show up at the, you know, chamber events and the, you know, community events, or do you kind of know your lane anymore? Because it's kind of the new mayor's town now. And so it's a weird spot to be in when you're still as young as I am, and you don't want to, you know, kind of step into their Cheerios every day. And so Mayor Huther, my predecessor, did a good job of that, if I'm being candid. I mean, he kind of went quiet, you know, and he just kind of disappeared for a while and like, all right, it's your town now, and I'm going to go, off the grid for a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so I got a lot of energy left and a lot I want to do, but I also want to respect that there's a new leader in our community, a new leadership, and it's my time to just maybe go a little quiet.
Yeah. What will you do day one?
Take a nap. Long nap.
Haven't had many naps in the last 8 years.
Start growing my ponytail. And
Mayor Paul Tenhaken, it has been a pleasure. We hope to talk to you often in the future, though.
Thanks, Lori.
That's Mayor Paul Ten Haken of Sioux Falls, and that is our conversation for today. We hope that it served you. From all of us here at SDPB, I'm Lori Walsh. Thank you for listening.